Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from George Mason University School of Business. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Applebaum Potomac Companies, John Hill and GMU, Beth Berman, AEG, Tim Young, Young Marketing Consultant, Megan Fishburn, Agency Q, Melissa Goldate, Morrison & Forster, Rob Longman, Longman & McGreck, Van Grack, and Emery Spetafore. And we have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Alka Dillon, CEO and founder of Technolink, followed by Christopher Mann, managing partner of Tyson's Corner Office, Cohn Resnick, Ken Lopez, founder and CEO of A2L Consulting, and James Jordan, shareholder of Carlton Fields, Jordan Burt. Let's get to know our first guest, Alka Dillon, CEO and founder of Technolink. Alka, what is Technolink? What are you guys doing?
Technolink's an IT services and management consulting firm headquartered in Tyson's Corner, Virginia.
And how large or how small is this organization?
It's a 30-person organization.
And how young were you when you started this business?
I was 28 when I started Technolink.
And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have two younger sisters.
So you're the oldest of three. And what happened when you were 23?
When I was 23, my father died suddenly of a heart attack.
What did that do to you and the family?
It was crushing for our family, and I had to step up and take on a role of being the breadwinner in the family.
Well, you didn't have to step up. It sounds like you did, though.
I felt like I had to at the time.
Does that have anything to do with your starting this business?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Well, I realized that I wanted and needed at that time to make a lot of money, and I realized at that time that I didn't want to work for anybody else, so I went ahead and decided to start my own business.
Mm-hmm. Didn't you realize that 85% of businesses fail and that it was the most risky way to make money?
There's no winning without risk.
So you were 23 when you started this business. You were 28 when you started this business. And I think John Hillen's got another question for you.
How young were you when you started working, Alka?
Eight.
And what did you do?
I washed dishes and mopped floors in my father's restaurant.
So your father ran the restaurant?
Yes.
And you were free labor?
Yes.
Yeah. Were you happy washing dishes and mopping floors?
No.
What did you want to do if you had to work in the restaurant at that age?
I wanted to count the money, and I wanted to use the cash register, and I wanted to go out and be a waitress and be in front of people.
Did you work your way up to those kind of tasks?
Yes.
Yeah, and then how did you feel about that once you were doing them? Did your father see the value in you doing those, or did he want you back at washing dishes?
I think he saw the value because I didn't go back to washing dishes, so I clearly was providing value at that time.
Mm, Megan?
What was your dynamic like with your siblings?
I was kind of felt like the guinea pig, but they call it trailblazing right now.
What do you mean by that?
So I felt like everything was, it was put her in front, make her do everything, and, you know, she's the one who's going to start or end anything.
And how does that affect your role in your company now?
Right now, I feel like I am, you know, leading that way, but trying to bring in a collaborative way, bringing in people together.
Rob?
Working with your father, what type of traits did you learn from him that you still use today?
There was no such thing. I think today they sit here and talk about do your best. It was being the best. You had to be the best.
And your father always taught you to be the best, or he pushed you harder?
You had to be the best, and yes, it kept pushing me harder.
And when you kept moving up, was your father advancing you, or were you taking the step to just take over?
I learned very quickly that if he had to tell me to do something, it wasn't going to impress him, so I had to do it on my own.
So you felt you were taking all these steps to impress your father and to become better?
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Timmy?
Was there ever a time you met your father's expectations?
You know, I I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I feel like I was always loved, but I always felt like the bar was always, it kept going higher, and I never thought there was an end to that.
How do you think your father would feel realizing that you stepped up when he passed?
I hope he would feel great about it.
Why?
Because I feel the biggest thing that he cared about was family and taking care of family and providing, and I feel I did that.
Sounds to me like he'd be proud of you. You kept the family together. Who's got the next question? I think we've got.
If he walked into your office today, you have a very successful company, what would he think?
He would say, good job, kid.
Would he really? Anne-Marie.
What about your relationship with your mom?
I love my mom. My mom was, and my mom is and was at that time a safe haven and just taught me so much about compassion for others.
What do you mean, safe haven?
You know, when you grow up and you're pushed so much to be the best and you have these such high expectations, when you have somebody to come home and say, you know what, you're doing great. It's okay. You're going to be okay.
So it sounds like you learned a softer side from her.
Yes.
How do you use that today?
Yeah.
I operate with a velvet hammer.
what do you mean by that? What are you talking about?
You know, I feel like when you're dealing with people, you want to extract the best out of them so that they perform the best for you and for the organization and for themselves. And you need to bring that hammer, but you need to lace it with compassion and understanding.
Mm-hmm. Melissa?
So you started washing dishes at age 8, and you were working long hours in a restaurant. But what did you want to do when you grew up?
Make a lot of money.
So it didn't matter the industry, or it was just more about making a lot of money?
It was making a lot of money and doing it efficiently and not having to put in the 18 hours a day that he worked. I wanted to do it in a much more efficient manner and make a lot more money.
And you wanted to be the leader, or you wanted to be the boss?
Yes.
Okay.
So you were trying to define the business model since the age of 8? You've been looking for the business model since the age of 8?
Yes, because that's the only way out. If you work for somebody else, you're not going to get there.
Yeah, but as opposed to just doing something to make money, it sounds to me like you kept modeling the most effective and efficient ways to make money.
Yes. Absolutely. I tried to find the quickest way I could get the job done so I could move to the next thing that would bring me the money within the restaurant.
Alka, was independence your goal and the money was incidental? What was driving this?
You know, independence was my initial goal. After my father passed, money became the big catalyst and the goal, and it was the driving factor at the time because it was a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Beth?
So, compassionate leader, yeah. You learned that.
You mentioned that money was the driver when your dad passed. Has that shifted over the course of time?
Yes. Money is no longer, thank goodness, the driving factor. It's not a necessity as much anymore. Now it's following passion and helping others.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
I love to write, and I've written a book called The Ohm Factor, and that's a big passion of
the
mine.
The what factor?
The Ohm Factor.
What's that all about?
It's about bringing spirituality into corporate America, into the business world.
Hold on. Bringing what to what?
Right. It's about bringing mindfulness and spirituality, finding your best self, and getting to a place where you're responding and not reacting to situations in negotiations.
Why is that so? Megan, go ahead.
Would you say that's, in many ways, the product of both your parents? It's kind of that velvet hammer?
Absolutely.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
When you look at my father and mother could not be more opposite people, and she was the velvet and he was the hammer, and both of them together was just amazing.
So this spirituality and mindfulness in business, how important is intuition in business?
It's paramount.
I'm surprised. I mean, you're the successful entrepreneurial businesswoman, and you're telling me you go with your instinct as opposed to the numbers?
Absolutely. Numbers are just those. They are completely static. If you want dynamic and dynamism and all those things brought into something, you need to go with your gut, always.
So do you enjoy developing your people?
Yes.
Why? What are you talking about? What do you mean?
I love learning. I love being able to meet any single person and extract the best out of them and have them follow their passions, all while hitting the bottom line of the organization.
So you're telling me after you got your way out of necessity, you know, where you had a couple of dollars to put aside. By the way, did you buy the fanciest car or the fanciest house?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And so you had some money to put aside, but this it's not a matter of just more and more money with you?
Now, no. Now money is just it's just a means, you know.
What do you mean it's a means?
It's a means that you it's a commodity, right? You're doing a transaction with money. I want to have a relationship. I want to build relationships.
You want a relationship with what? What are you talking about?
I want a relationship with anyone that I meet. I want to be able to forge new territory and, as I said, bring out the best in others.
Was that mom or dad?
That's both.
What do you mean?
Dad was always about, bringing the best out in others, right? And mom made it feel good.
Give me that again.
Dad was all about bringing the best out in others, right? Pushing you to the point of where you are doing your best or being the best. And mom just made it feel good. She really did. You felt comfortable.
Who's got the next question here?
You've got a creative side to you, Elka, because you've got this notable leadership book out, but you're running a company. So where did that creative side come from when you were a kid? How did that express itself?
I love to dance. And I think dancing brought out so much creativity through movement.
And what was your role on the dance team?
I wasn't noted or defined as the leader, but I feel like I became the leader because I wanted us to be the best dance team.
So how'd that show up? How did that show up?
It showed up with, I noticed that there were certain people that weren't, I think, performing up to par, and I gently took them aside and said, hey, why don't we spend some time together and get better?
How old were you?
At that time, I was 9.
9 years old, huh? What's the website address for this organization?
Technolink.net.
Let me have that one more time.
Technolink.net.
We've been speaking with Elka Dillon, CEO and founder of Technolink, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this break. And your name is?
John Hillen.
And John, I understand that you spent time in the military. What were you doing? And I also understand that you took a company public. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I started off out of college as a reconnaissance officer in the Army and ended up leading men in combat in Desert Storm and a couple of other places. And then when I transitioned to business, I didn't know anything about business, but I was interested in the leadership aspect of things that I had learned in the Army.
And I understand that you took some of the stuff you learned from the Army into business. It sounds to me like you had a pretty successful business career because you ended up taking a company public, didn't you?
I did. I had to learn the whole profession of business, but I ended up starting a few companies, and one of them we grew pretty quickly. And in 2009, in the middle of the recession, we did one of only 25 successful IPOs in the American economy that year, and then grew up to a couple $100 million in revenue and ended up selling it to a large private equity firm.
So you've really been there and done that. You know what you're talking about. This is not something purely academic. You've actually been there and done it in terms of starting from scratch and taking a company public. I understand you just recently wrote a book, and you're getting some pretty interesting reviews about this book. Can you tell us about the reviews?
Yeah, so I set out to write a book. I teach the leadership and strategy courses in the School of Business at George Mason. And I set out to write a book about something I'd seen in my career, which is all these businesses that plan to grow and many succeed, but the leaders don't make any plans to grow themselves to have the new skills they need to lead their businesses at the level to which they take them. So we had this phenomenon of when leaders grow, or leaders don't grow, rather, but their businesses do, and they get left behind.
Huh, that's interesting. You're getting some fascinating reviews. Where can we find out more about this book?
WhatHappensNowBook.com, and you can see the reviews in advance praise and pre-order from Amazon.com there.
Let me have that one more time.
WhatHappensNowBook.com.
Excellent. Your name again is?
John Hillen.
And John has been there and done that and just recently wrote the book. We're back in a moment right after this break.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752.
Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
I live alone and rarely have visitors. So when I slipped and fell in the kitchen last month and couldn't get to a phone, I knew I was in trouble.
Help!
I could barely move.
Help!
I tried calling for help, but no one could hear me. As I lay there, I couldn't help but think of my kids and grandkids having to go on without me. I was terrified. It took 8 hours for my neighbor to find me. It could have been the end of me. That's when I knew I needed Life Alert. With just one press of this button, I'm connected to the Life Alert Center, where I can get the help I need, even when I cannot reach a phone. With Life Alert, I'm never alone.
Call 1-800-414-1958 for your free Life Alert brochure. That's 1-800-414-1958. 1-800-414-1958. Call for your free Life Alert brochure today at 1-800-414-1958.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Christopher Mann, Managing Partner, Tyson's Corner Office of Cohn Resnick. What is Cohn Resnick?
Cohn Resnick is amongst the largest accounting, tax, and advisory firms in the country.
Uh-huh. Where are you from originally?
I'm from a place called Atlanta, Maryland, in Prince George's County, Maryland.
Uh-huh. And how many brothers and sisters?
I have a younger sister.
Younger sister. All right. Rob, your turn.
How long have you been at Cohn Resnick?
I've been at Cohn Resnick my entire professional career, almost 20 years.
And where did you learn that commitment to your employer from?
My father was a police officer, retired after 30 years on the force, and my mother was a nurse who spent 30-plus years in the profession as well.
And what does that commitment that they had to their professions do for you and teach you?
The loyalty to organizations, how long they spent with the people that they've worked with, the relationships they built over time, the friends that they made along the way, and then just also giving back to the people that they took care for.
So it just wasn't loyalty to the employer. It's almost a loyalty to everyone around you.
Yeah, I think it's the civil service, how they gave back to their communities.
Megan?
Would you consider your parents role models?
My parents were my heroes. My father.
What do you mean by that?
My father, a police officer, seeing the sacrifices that he made to go out every day. I don't think he realized as a young child, that his life is in danger. My sister and I always felt protected, and my mother was there taking care of us, and not only us, but other people.
And how has that translated to your role today?
People are our most important asset. How we give back to our communities and also to our employees. They're really the lifeblood of any organization, and really that commitment to the people and wanting to see them reach their goals and successes in their careers.
Chris, what did you do for fun growing up in Atlanta, Maryland?
What did I do? I started out in baseball and then quickly migrated to ice hockey.
Ice hockey. Why ice hockey?
The pace of the sport, I love change. It was a very fast, fluid exciting for me.
And what was your role on that ice hockey team?
I wasn't the most talented, so I had a lot of hard work. Wasn't afraid to go where other people weren't, throw my body around and kind of make an impact any way I could.
Did you ever lay down in front and take shots before they got to the goalie?
Always. It's all part of that teamwork.
Do you do that as part of your job now at work? Do you lay down on the tracks for your customers, your employees?
As being a leader of an organization and really sometimes anyone makes mistakes, and how we all come together and we protect those that work for us is very key.
Tim?
We talked before the show a little bit, and you said you picked your career because you loved problem solving. As a kid, what kind of problems did you have to solve?
Solving problems was, I was in a science and technology program. It was just embedded in kind of my education throughout the years. I quickly realized that I wasn't going to be an engineer or a scientist, and found accounting, and it's about solving problems.
Mm-hmm. And even younger than that, you mentioned numbers looked a little strange to you.
Yeah, growing up, I'm not a great test taker. I never could take tests well. I have a challenge early on that I've recovered from is really I read too fast, flipped numbers around and letters around, and it kind of made it very difficult, especially in time tests.
So what did that teach you?
I have to spend a lot more time to accomplish the same things that for other people might come a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm. How's that affected your career in a positive manner?
There's, the hard work and putting in that extra effort, there's nothing that, I won't do myself that I've asked other people to do.
Mm-hmm. Where does your drive come from?
The drive really comes from, seeing my parents both what you would consider blue-collar jobs, really wanting to impress them.
And what else? Any other relationships from your childhood?
With my sister, you know, my sister was always the smarter one, I would say. When I take a step back and look through, she was the one who always got the good grades, went to the better school. There was, I hate to say jealousy, but I would say there's some jealousy there.
Christopher, are you conscious of the fact that you've been wanting to please mom and dad?
Yeah, I think it's something that I've realized later on in my career is really always wanting to impress them and strive for more.
Always wanting to impress them and strive for more. And you think that's what drove you? As opposed to, you know, you getting beat up as a kid or rotten things happening? It's this positive stuff?
Yeah, I would say that I don't think I was ever beaten up as a kid, per se. Maybe mom and dad were a little bit harder on me, just being a police officer and the things my father saw. But, you know, really with them, you know, we both, when going to college, I was the first person to go to college in my family, really pushing a little bit harder to become better.
And you're all about camaraderie, because didn't you mention that you and mom graduated within a day of each other or
that
something?
That is exactly correct, sir.
So what'd that do to you? What's the effect of that on you?
I think it was, you know, for me personally to, you know, be the first person in the family to graduate from college. But seeing that, you know, my mom went back to school and put in that additional time when she was already earning a good income, you know, to continue to grow and develop yourself. And then my father right thereafter went back to get his college degree as well.
Now I see why you mentioned that they were your heroes. It sounds to me like as a family where there was a lot of separation and screaming and yelling, it's like, you know, you were really bonded. You really did see them as your heroes. Melissa?
So, going back to your sister, you mentioned that there was some jealousy between her. Things came much easier to her, but you're also obviously very self-motivated. Where did you find the confidence to pursue those goals?
The confidence is just something in everything I do, whether it's sports or it's the profession. When I commit my mind to something, my wife says that I kind of obsess on things. I just focus on the end result and how I'm going to get there and then continue to work until I achieve it.
But would you say that was there any particular person who helped you believe that you could do it? I mean, I understand that you're self-motivated, but in terms of truly believing that you could achieve something when you were struggling so hard?
Yeah, I mean, my mother and father were definitely role models in that aspect. Not having a college education and then going to get it and seeing what they're able to accomplish and the different impact that they're going to make. I mean, my father's 70 years old and he's still working. He still works for the county and the government, so he's still that civil servant, and just continuing to see the impact that he makes has always been a big push.
So you're all about the community. You're all about it's not winning at any expense. It's winning with the team. You're all about the team.
Yeah. So individual success only takes you so far. I mean, what a team can do and of getting a group of people, you know, I see myself as the chief motivator, really motivating the employees to get a little bit more.
Wow.
And make a bigger impact.
Beth?
How, at this point, would you say, how together as a team are you making your greatest impact?
How as a team are we making our greatest impact?
Well, it sounds to me like you're all about the team, as opposed to being a leader that tells people what to do and screams and yells at them. You know, you're right in there with them, like your mom was right in there taking college courses with you.
Yeah, I'm the first person to recognize that I don't have all the answers. Reaching out into the group of an organization, having access to people, younger and older, to help, you know, shape the future is kind of the key.
Wait a minute. So your organization starts got you dead center of it. Well, maybe it even doesn't have, maybe it has you at the bottom of it. It sounds to me like you depend on everybody.
Yes, sir, that would be correct.
Huh, so it's not like somebody, so the receptionist might have a better answer. What's the website address of this organization?
It's conresnick.com.
How do you spell that?
It's conresnick.com.
We've been speaking with Christopher Mann, managing partner, Tyson's Corner office of Cone Resnick, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Back in a moment, right after this break. Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that. They've succeeded in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars, and some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com.
Do you want to take the great shows of BizTalk Radio wherever you go? Well, now you can with the new BizTalk Radio app for iPhone and Android devices. Now all the great shows of BizTalk Radio are with you wherever you go, just an arm's reach away on your smartphone. Download today at the App Store or the Google Play Store and get the brand new BizTalk Radio app. It's biz for you wherever you go with the new BizTalk Radio app.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-285-4765 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-285-4765. Again, 800-285-4765.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp. Get started with your idea. Call for free information.
Call 1-800-607-8945. That's 1-800-607-8945.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
Life insurance is one of those things that just about everybody needs, but few people actually have. Hey, if you die unexpectedly without life insurance, guess what? You'll leave your family with even a bigger mess. Life insurance will help replace your family's income. It'll help cover burial expenses. Life insurance can even help pay off debt like credit cards and medical bills. Life insurance can even pay for college. And if you own a business and you die, life insurance can help your business from collapsing. It can even help cover estate taxes. Life insurance has never been more affordable and needed. Plus, you can always shop around even if you have a plan and save some money. So call the Life Insurance Quote Line right now for free pricing information.
800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. That's 800-915-9658.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-569-3414. That's 800-569-3414. Again, 800-569-3414.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, and we'd like to introduce Ken Lopez, founder and CEO of A2L Consulting. Ken, what is A2L Consulting? What are you doing?
A2L is a litigation consulting firm, so we're in the business of helping large law firms involved in very large trials with large clients pick juries and make presentations that teach and persuade juries and judges.
Mm-hmm. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Alexandria, Virginia.
How many brothers and sisters?
I was raised as an only child, but I have an older half-sister.
How young were you when you started making money?
I started very young, selling cards door to door, selling magazines, selling albums.
How about with Grandpa?
Grandpa in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, used to wake me up at 5 a.m., force me out to this flea market where we would sell used goods.
How young were you when you were doing this?
Five, 6 years old, we started.
John?
What happened at the flea market? What was your role? Did you just unload the truck and then go sit in and eat lunch?
No. Grandpa, in fact, would help me and put me in a position where we're staging the goods. I mean, old pipe parts and old tools. And then, famously, he would leave me alone
Did he expect you to sell things while he was gone?
I was not only expected to sell things, I was expected to sell things at the right price.
Is that the first time you realized that you were in the business of trying to persuade others?
It was.
Mm-hmm. And how does that affect how you're in the persuasion and presentation business now? How does that affect how you run your company?
Well, in my role, I'm very, very often involved in the business development side of the business. And what I'm able to see is when a negotiation is occurring, what I've learned is you watch someone's feet and you see where they're going to go. Are they walking away? Because that means you're on your way to know.
Didn't you mention as a kid that you were only 5 years old and some of these people thought they might be taking advantage of you, but you were watching their body language? What was that all about?
Yeah, that's right. So watching people's feet in the context of a negotiation is the greatest tell I've ever found.
So you were watching this as a kid, 5 years old. If people were standing there negotiating with you, you knew they were continuing to negotiate.
That's exactly correct.
Tim?
How did you know you wanted to get into a field that involves psychology?
Well, very young, I knew that I wanted to become a lawyer. That was a decision that happened in second grade.
How? What happened there?
So a friend's dad came in, spoke to our class on career day and said, Does anyone else want to be a lawyer?
Yeah.
I raised my hand and very famously said, yes. And then he asked, well, what kind? And I said, well, a rich one, of course.
Tim, what's your follow-on question there?
Why did it matter to be rich?
So I grew up in a neighborhood where we were the middle-class family of in a very wealthy neighborhood. And so I was sort of made fun of, really, by a lot of the kids I grew up with. You know, does your dad make $100,000 a year? If not, what's wrong with you? So money became a motivator.
How'd that make you feel?
It made me feel sort of sad for both me and for them at the time.
Why did it make you feel sad for them?
Because I honestly believe they were focused on the wrong things for them.
That's interesting. So in other words, making the money was a way for you to prove yourself. It wasn't money in its own right. It was just a way for you to prove yourself.
I think that's exactly right.
Uh-huh. Rob?
What type of relationships did you have with the friends and people in the neighborhood?
Yeah, so as an only child, I really was very intentional about making friends and hanging out with other people, and I was very much the influencer amongst the group, and still am.
And would you organize the group to go on to different activities and kind of setting the tone for them?
Not only then, but I do the same now.
And what led you to do that when you were younger?
When I was younger, the motivation was I'm going to create the most fun, and this is how I'm going to have the most friends.
So you had innovation in your bones back then. You were inventing ways to do things back then.
I think that's right.
So in other words, it didn't matter that it wasn't in front of you. You were going to figure out how to make it happen. Rob, what else do you think?
Are you still in touch with any of those individuals that you had as when you were younger?
I am. I grew up in nearby in the neighborhood, and I still see a lot of the same people.
So those relationships and relationships in general must be extremely important to you if you've kept them this long.
You're exactly right. It's important to me to keep friends and maintain friends and invest time in it.
Anne-Marie?
So Grandpa was really gruff, but he was also very influential. How did that shape you?
Well, like I think so many people in my position, somebody is never telling you you're fantastic and you're doing a great job. In fact, you're constantly trying to get them to do that, and yet they never do.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you excel, you try, and you keep being motivated by that lack of approval and praise.
Is that where nothing's ever good enough comes from?
Indeed.
Uh-huh. All right. Beth?
How does that innovative spirit come at play out today in your work?
So in my work, we're in the business every day of trying to figure out how to explain things and that are incredibly complex or sometimes controversial. And every day is a new challenge in trying to be innovative to teach, persuade, and win cases.
So you're telling me that every day, you know, you're figuring out a way to make things, just like you were trying to figure out ways to engage all the kids in the neighborhood, you know, how to persuade them to join your team to get in and get involved. As Rob was pointing out, it's the same thing you're doing nowadays. You're inventing every day. And innovating is your middle name. Megan?
When did you first start kind of developing this love of taking people from a no to a yes?
For sure, this started back in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania with my grandpa, but it was all those little childhood businesses.
And how did you do it? You know, working at the flea market, how did you manage to do that?
So the key way that I managed it is engaging with people, maintaining a lot of eye contact, watching their feet in the process of the negotiation and see, are they walking away or are they staying? And if they're walking away, I know I've got trouble and I need to lower price. But if they're staying, I know I need to stand firm and focus on the quality of the part or tool or old piece of junk that I was trying to attempt to motivate them to take.
And on a certainly different scale, how do you use that in your profession today?
Well, of course, everything we do now is fantastic, so I don't have to do that motivation part. But the all kidding aside, now there's two ways we do it. One is in how we meet and engage with new clients, and then two, how we meet and engage with potential jurors and how we motivate them to make the right decision.
Melissa?
So you obviously like to negotiate and be persuasive, and you like to innovate, but it sounds like you're not someone who is a big fan of rules. So...
You're exactly correct. I'm definitely a contrarian, and I definitely don't like to do things like everyone else. I went to law school, but yet I came out and started a company.
So even though your goal was to make a lot of money, why law school? Why not your MBA, or why that avenue when it's so focused on rules?
So it was because it was a decision I made in second grade, and that decision was consistently supported by everyone around me. And so that sort of marched me down that path.
Huh. So your nature, once something gets in your blood, you're not letting it go. You're going to go take it from A to Z. You like completion.
You're exactly right.
Uh-huh. And it was also a matter of, it was sounds like it's also a matter of respect, because the neighborhood kids would make you feel bad that mom and dad weren't making a lot of money, and you know, this was a legitimate way of making a lot of money, even though eventually it ended up you innovated it, doing it your own way in terms of the firm you created.
You're correct.
Uh-huh. Do you have any competition?
We do. There's a handful
the
of
the truth is though, do you really have any competition? I don't think so. It sounds to me like you're going to keep on innovating. Is there any firm as innovative as yours?
There's no firm that's as innovative or forward-thinking or demonstrating the true thought leadership nationally that we are. I'm proud of us.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
So we run the number one blog around litigation and the kind of things that we do in the country, and every day thousands of people show up and read about the kinds of ideas we have and how we approach persuasion and a whole host of issues related to litigation.
So your innovations actually allowed you to carve out a very special niche in terms of your, even though it may look like you've got competition, you really don't. What you're doing, you do better than anybody else.
We do.
Uh-huh. And it sounds like a lot of that motivation comes from your childhood, you know, where the kids would like laugh at you and stuff. But you brought innovation to your bones. John, what are you thinking there? What else are you thinking?
Your grandfather walked away, left you at the booth. Have you grown this firm? Do you have that talent to walk away and let other people do their job? Are you happy achieving through others now, or do you have to kind of reach in and do everything yourself?
Oh, it's a complex answer. The truth is, I love to have a lot of control over a lot of things or let go completely. There isn't much of a middle ground. So I either delegate too little or too much, according to my staff.
Mm-hmm. Rob, what are you thinking? Or Megan, either way.
How you've had to innovate, but obviously we started with an idea. What is your viewpoint on taking these ideas and making them better?
So taking ideas and making them better is something that we in fact are engaged in constantly, right? We work with the best lawyers in the world, and these are people who we just need to add a little bit of value, but it might be that last, those last 5 yards or that last 5 or 10% that helps them win a case.
Where did that come from? Where was it from your childhood where you started finding a way that I have to push something to make it a little bit better?
Certainly.
How does that relate back to the flea market where you're trying to get the best price and push a little bit harder?
Sure. Of course it does. Grandpa left me at a booth asking me to get the best price, and he'd walk away. And then as soon as he came back, the first thing
website,
I had to do
what's
was
the
report.
Website, what's the website address of this organization?
It's A2LC.com.
You've been speaking with Ken Lopez, founder and CEO of A2L Consulting, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. Your name and organization is?
Zev Wexler, and I'm with Wexler.
And what is Wexler?
Wexler is a company that helps other companies market their goods and services.
You help? So you're a marketing firm?
We are.
Where are you from originally?
I was born and raised in Jerusalem, Israel.
And how young were you when this marketing instinct began to show up?
As young as I can remember, I opened a nightclub when I was 15 years old.
All right, so you're 15 years old, and you opened up a nightclub. Was that nightclub successful?
Very.
Why was it very successful?
I was always connected to my peers. I knew what they wanted, and I knew how to entice them to come and get it.
Isn't that the essence of marketing, knowing what your customers are wanting to buy and then figuring out how to sell it to them?
Absolutely, that's what I believe.
So give us an idea of what did you do to get your friends and other folks to come to this club you started in Israel?
My reputation was if I was involved with a party, it's going to be a good party. That's something I worked very hard to maintain. And every time my name appeared on a party, people wanted to come because they wanted to be a part of the stories of next week.
So you're telling me that you believe that, unlike what we hear about marketing, where, basically it's a bunch of lies, you believe reputation is really important in marketing, huh?
Marketing has changed 100%. It's all about what other people think of you. It's no longer what you think about yourself.
So it's about reputation. So you're really concerned about the clients you get involved with and helping make sure that their reputation is what's really needed in order to be able to sell whatever it is they're selling, whatever product or service they're selling.
More so than that, if the client does not have a reputation, no matter how much money he's going to pay me, I will not work with them.
So you're pretty choosy in terms of the clients you want because you want to make sure that you really can do a good job with the marketing, huh?
Yes, sir.
Just like you were careful who you would let into the club. If someone was causing trouble, you wouldn't let them in, I bet. What's the website address of your organization?
WexlerLLC.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Wexler, WEXLER.com.
Then your name again is?
Zev Wexler.
And this has been your Business Spotlight.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now.
800-834-4690. 800-834-4690. That's 800-834-4690.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe.
all great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Their expert staff can help you turn your book idea into a real book, a masterpiece that could someday make the bestseller list in hard copy and digitally all across the world. Page Publishing can help you completely take your idea for a book, write it, and publish it. So if you want to join the ranks of some of the most famous authors in the world, call now for a free information kit. Turn your book idea into publishing gold. Make a free call right now to Page Publishing.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Lily Harris, President and CEO of Man Machine Systems Assessment. Lily, what is Man Machine Systems Assessment?
MSA is a defense contracting firm that specializes in the operational test and evaluation of defense weapon systems.
How large or how small is this organization?
So we're looking to do $15 million this year. We have 50-plus employees and some great strategic partners.
And where are you from originally?
I'm from El Paso, Texas.
And how many brothers and sisters?
I'm an only child.
All right. Les, your turn.
Yeah, Lily, how young were you when you started making money?
I was very young. I was selling gift wrap paper, candy, baseball cards, you name it. But I really started working with my father at 10 when we started MSA.
So 10 years old, you had to go work with your dad?
I loved it. He traveled a lot for work, so this was our father-daughter time.
What did you learn from that you use today?
I loved working. You work 7 days a week, and we made it fun, and I really try to make work fun.
Gene?
I guess it must have been very difficult for you to grow up in a family business or start your career there. What challenges did you face?
Sure. Coming in, there was a lot of assumptions of people as me as the boss's daughter. So I worked very, very hard to, pay my dues, be a hard worker, prove myself. I never expected anything. And it took a long time. It took years for me to really... I would say be accepted by the team.
Jen?
You have a really unique competitive edge. Where'd you get that from, mom or dad?
I definitely got that from my mother. My father always said, just don't come in last. And my mom said, no one remembers second. So she certainly, through family game nights and sports and everything, really, really pushed me. But in a fun way to try to be the best.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, what question you got there?
Your background from childhood, playing sports, competitive sports, soccer, then lead you into college with a degree in psychology and also in film, and then now you're running a company. How do you make that connection to get from soccer field to running the business?
Sure. I think the team dynamic is really important to me, and I try to build that in my personal and professional life, especially at work. Psychology really helps me understand teams and my people. And my stint at film school was really helping my creative side in telling stories and, bringing dreams into reality.
Michael?
So you trained in martial arts and you ran a defense in soccer. That requires a whole lot of discipline. How do you run a disciplined business?
Well, I'm very disciplined personally, so I, you know, I try to listen to everyone, take in all the information, try not to be impulsive with my decisions, and just discipline of my time and my energy at work every single day.
Brian?
Lily, what type of occupation were you interested in when you were younger, 12, 13 years old?
I always wanted to be a doctor.
And what did you learn, even when you talked a little bit earlier about even when you were a doctor, you sort of had an entrepreneurial feel to it. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What were you thinking?
Absolutely. My vision was to have a family practice, but it would be my own. I could hire other doctors. So I still had that business mindset. Also, I wanted to be a doctor because of the competitive nature of becoming the best and the pushing myself to be a specialist.
Mm-hmm. So you, all along, you had a drive to build a team and to be a specialist.
Yes.
Uh-huh. If we were doing a good interview on you, what did we miss so far? What are we missing about who you really are?
I think it's important that the creative side of me. So I'm a defense contractor. It's kind of black and white. And I had to find a creative way to look at how I do my work and my industry so that it would resonate within me and I could become passionate about it.
Tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean?
Well, up until the time where I went to film school, you know, I took that time to go to film school, and that's when it really started clicking. The entrepreneur side of me and creative side had kind of died in college and when I first started my career. But in taking these classes and eventually producing some short movies, I was able to work with a budget, you know, staff these movies, work with the script. And when I came back to my business, I was able to look at it in a creative way. And I still very much think of my business as a movie and what story are we trying to tell?
Interesting. Michael, what else are you thinking?
So I read something about you that said you're inspiring the next generation of leaders, which is a very bold charge. Was that your dad that kind of taught you don't just lead yourself, but inspire the next generation, or did someone else have an influence on that?
100%, that's my father. We always gave back as a family, and he, you know, I give back via mentorship and investing in STEM technologies and programs. So that's 100% my father and our family legacy.
Gene, Jen, who's got the next question?
How was it coming in, taking over from your dad, and then incorporating this kind of storytelling creative side? Was that difficult, integrating that into the business?
Not necessarily, because I don't know how much of that you can feel like from my team perspective. That's how I need to see the business, and that's how I'm the most authentic leader at work. So, but I mean, we're all, as CEOs, we're all trying to tell our story, you know, and it helps us when we talk to our team to do it in an authentic way. So I think storytelling is, whether you think you're doing it or not, it's a very, very important thing that we can all do in our families and business.
Mm-hmm. Lily, how difficult is it to be a female CEO in a male-dominated industry?
Sure, it has its challenges, but you got to know your stuff. I didn't let it bother me. I think I had more challenges coming in as a young CEO than a female CEO.
So how did you establish yourself as a CEO, as a young CEO, and as a young woman CEO?
Well, I mean, you have to pay your dues. You have to know your stuff. And I can attribute a lot of my success to mentorship. So I was able to reach out to CEOs who'd already done stuff. And then I was able to join organizations where there was other successful female CEOs that I could look up to and kind of create this sisterhood tribe. So that's for sure been a huge part
Excellent.
Of my
what's
success.
What's the website address of this organization, MMA Systems Assessment?
MSAcorp.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Lily Harris, President and CEO of MMA Systems Assessment, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Les, can you give us a rundown on who we've had the opportunity of speaking with today?
We had Joseph Carter, CEO, R&K Cyber Solutions, with an S. We had Dave Zolette, CEO, LMI. We have Kevin Turpin, President, National Journal, and Lily Harris, President and CEO, Man Machine Systems Assessment.
Excellent. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Jennifer Wappas, Pagnotto Carp, Brian Chandler, Pretoria Law, Gene Sachs, Cressa, Jerry Musioli, Colombo Bank, Mike Sweeney, RightSource Marketing, and Les Smalling from Vistage, giving me hand structure in the questions. Hope you're providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. Thank you for listening today. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, Executive Leaders Radio. Have a nice day. Bye-bye. Wow, we nailed that.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.